Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Welcome back to the Rengineering YouTube and podcast. And so it's an interesting one because this week I was supposed to bring you the Rengineering first cars and coffee, all the content from that. However, in my infinite wisdom, first event, lots going on, me kind of doing the shepherding, marshalling, getting cars in the right places, trying to set up the Alex Nash 356, 59356A, your Porsche story. And in amongst all of that and seeing people I know and trying to be polite, I failed to get any content. So less of that, but I did shoot the interview with Alex Nash. So that's coming up very soon on Your Porsche Stories. If you want to be on a Your Porsche Story, and thankfully I've got quite a few booked now, but if you still want to be on that, and it's 15 minutes basically, of you talking me through from your earliest car memories all the way through to where you are now and what Porsche you have and what plans and what journeys you've got available to you. So if you want to do that, info@rengineering.com, or you can head over to the DMs in Instagram, which is at rengineeringuk. Give me a shout and we'll sort something out. In this episode, because there is no Rengineering Cars and Coffee content, I have timed it off the back of, I'd say a good friend, he's not really a good friend, but I'm starting to get to know him a little bit, and that is Jeff from Home Built by Jeff. Now, if you haven't seen Jeff's content and his channel, Home Built by Jeff, I would absolutely urge you to go over and have a look, because very similar to me in that he's very open about what he knows, what he doesn't know, shows all the lumps and bumps and the hits and the misses along the way. This is me in conversation with Jeff. Your Porsche story, but in an extended version, basically trying to find out what he's up to. And the reason for the timing now is because his Alpha 105 bodied, you can't call it a GTA, you can't call it a Giulia, because it has a Ferrari 360 engine in the front. So we talk about that. We talk about his 911 Harry, that his air called 911. We talk about the Rockster, which is his horrendous 986 Boxster. We basically get into a whole thing. So that's coming up. In the meantime, though, I wanted to talk about the 911K from Tut Hill. And if you haven't seen the Chris Harris, I think it's like a 10-minute video, basically, of Chris and Richard Tut Hill blasting around a track and just having a, you know, a whale of a time. The 911K for me is top tier. There's loads of stuff, right? And I get excited about Singer, Theon, cam manufacturer. There's people doing amazing stuff. Tut Hill are top of the tree, like really in that kind of top bracket of amazing resto mod stuff, and they probably resto mods doing it a bit of a injustice there. So I would absolutely encourage anyone to go and see that. And if you think about the Ren 550 and what the Ren 550 is going to be, quite close to that in terms of the level of driver engagement, in terms of the wow factor, the kind of the hairs going up on your arm. If I don't achieve that building the Ren 550, then as far as I'm concerned, I've failed. So, and just to remind you, this Rengineering, the YouTube channel itself and the podcast, there's lots of stuff, there's lots of content around Porsche, me learning about the brand and the heritage of the brand, and getting to talk to amazing people about it. But ultimately, it's about building a Porsche 550 Spider recreation, based on a Lotus chassis with an air-cooled engine, TBC, what the engine's going to be, but we're going to talk to Wrightune about that. So, and it's going to be a carbon fiber body 101, and then that's going to be auctioned off at the end of the build process. So that's what the channel is for. So the 911K, if you go and watch that, and then that'll give you some inspiration as to what I want to achieve when I build the Ren 550. The Cayman, which is just out of shot, but it's just down here, that's going quite well. It's my personal car, so I'm kind of putting time and effort into getting it how I want, without investing tens of thousands into it. So far, I love it. I've just been out for a drive, an hour and a half through kind of the West Meon area and Droxford, and yeah, and there's some brilliant Petersfield. There's some great roads around the sort of South Hampshire area. So I've just been out blasting around that. That's really cool. Specifically though, the interior's been what I've been working on for the last couple of months. And I've got the, finally got a date now, which is the 12th of February, for the car to go to D-Class to have the seats retrimmed, the steering wheel retrimmed, and the gear gaiter retrimmed. I'm gonna get to a whole thing, right? So after this episode with Jeff now, I think I've got one more episode where it's a tech talk. And then after that, I'm gonna do a bit of a back history tour, because I banked a load of content from selling this car, this 981 Cayman, and then all the way to where we are now, which is gone through, you know, it's gone from completely vanilla standard all the way through to where it is now, which is kind of my version of exclusive manufacture for what a 981 Cayman could be. So yeah, that's the theory. Anyway, I'm gonna drop that content in kind of a sequence, right? So you'll see kind of the back history from me selling it and going, that's it, I'm done, I'm gonna get something else, all the way to where we are now, which is kind of right back at the start. So that's the interior of the Cayman. In terms of content coming up booked, I've got quite a lot booked. I've got a lot shot and in the bank already, but I've also got a lot being booked at the moment. So next week I'm with O Sports, Jake Oliveira. Jake and I have known each other for probably 10 or so years now, although not infrequent contact. And Jake is a, so frustrating, I can't tell you who he works for because he does private work that has got NDAs all over it. But he's a carbon fiber, custom carbon fiber manufacturer. He made some carbon fiber parts for my Elise cup that I made 8 years ago. I was so impressed with the quality, it was incredible. And I had pre-prod stuff, I didn't even have full production, and it was incredible. So when it comes to the 550 build, which is obviously gonna be a carbon fiber body, I've already been to KS Composites, and that was really interesting. That content's gonna come out at some point soon. But Jake is much closer to me than KS. And it's a, he's a small company, and I love that, right? So that's where I am next weekend with Jake at O Sports. And then the weekend after that, I am at Motorsport Wiring in South Wales. And that is for it's the wiring, right? I've got I'm reasonably competent in wiring in general, and in electronics and electrics for cars. But there's still a long way to go for me. So rather than me kind of wing it, which I don't want to do, I'm going to enlist the support and help of people in the industry that really do know what they're doing, and Motorsport Wiring, again, right up there. So I'll be taking lots of tips, asking lots of questions. And again, the intention with this is to bring you along with it, with me along the way. That's enough of me talking, right? This is supposed to be an intro, and we are at, I can't even see what we're at. 7 minutes of me waffling on. Anyway, in true waffle style, I'm gonna hand over to me and Jeff now. So this is me and Home Built by Jeff talking about his everything that he's been doing for the last 10 or so years on YouTube. I hope you really enjoy it, and I'll see you back at the end.
Before we start, I literally just did I thought I'd do a deep dive in your Instagram, and the thing that made me laugh the most was backyard hack car builder with a YouTube channel. Mate, I don't know how tongue-in-cheek that is, but you are anything but, sir. You are, like, I've been so impressed with, especially Alfa Ferrari, right? That thing, yeah, it's coming together so beautifully. But I should do an introduction, shouldn't I? So welcome to the channel, Rengineering, Home Built by Jeff. If you are listening to this and you haven't seen Jeff's YouTube channel, it's exploded over the last couple of years anyway. Lots of stuff on Harry, the air called 911. We'll get into that in a bit. But yeah, it's compelling watching from a voyeur perspective. And yeah, just the diversity in what you're building. You know, the Rocks is one thing, Harry's another thing, the Alfa Ferrari is another thing altogether. Anyway, welcome, Jeff, to Rengineering, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, that's not too much of a stretch. The backyard hack home car builder. It's just, I just wing it. You know, I've been doing from sort of Harry onwards. I've been tinkering with cars since I was, you know, in my early 20s. But yeah, I just like to learn how to do things. So I have no qualifications in anything, but I give it a go, and I'm just stubborn and bloody minded and try and get it as good as I can.
And you know what? So Ajmal, I know Ajmal really well, and you spoke to him not long ago, right?
Yes.
I put that post up, and I don't know if you noticed, but he put a response saying he thought you were awesome. And this is the truth as well from the heart. For me, the most interesting bit and the thing that I respect most about you is the fact that you show the warts and all stuff, right? Like, you're super humble when it comes to this now, saying
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
You know, not qualified in anything. I would say bullshit. Your time served qualified in this stuff now, I think. You know, there's an element that
maybe
you've made enough mistakes to kind of like figure the good ways out, right?
That's fair. Look, I do my research, and I try and do as good a quality job as I can. I mean, I look back at Harry now, and I just want to pull it apart and do it again.
Really?
Oh yeah, there's so many things that I could do. My skills level has gotten so much better since I did Harry. Sure. So there's so many things I would like to do again. And look, it's a constant, like most of these cars, it's a constant evolution. Harry's getting better and better all the time.
Yeah. Even like tick over and cold start and running, like, you know, even that's fairly recent, right? Getting that dialed in and it's suddenly kind of running really well.
That part of it is actually, engine wise, it's pretty good. Besides the odd like little exhaust leak, or like recently I had to adjust the valves, which is just a common thing. Seeing as I was wringing the neck of Harry for the previous times I'd sort of driven it, I'd done the Adelaide Rally and things like that, which is just absolutely, you know,
rinses like the hell out of it, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm just on it. Like, I don't think I've ever been on it for such a long amount of time so heavily. Like, a lot of the road drives you do, even though we really get into it, you're still cautious because there's cars coming the other way and things like that. The closed roads and just going for it, you're just absolutely wringing the neck out of it. It's like a long track day, but I haven't actually done a long, really heavy track day.
Like an endurance track day, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So for those, because obviously, you know, I would think most people, especially if they're tuned into Porsche or YouTube, any automotive YouTuber, they would come across you at one point or another. But give the listeners, what is Harry? Give the listeners a kind of a backstory of how you got Harry, what it is, and how it's come to be what it is right now.
All right. Well, I wasn't actually looking for, I've always was watching the air-cooled 911s, but I just bought my first Porsche, which was a Cayman S, 987 Cayman S, which I only had for 3 months because it had scored bores and I flicked it because I was so paranoid about driving it. As nice as it was. And Harry came up. I saw this rusty black air-cooled 911. It's a 74 air-cooled 911 with a blown engine. It had been sitting outside for 10 years with the blown engine, and it was in a pretty horrible state. And it's originally a US delivered car that was very badly converted to right-hand drive. And just in a very sorry state. So I never set out to be a YouTuber. Basically, I was on the Porsche forums, and there was actually a UK guy. I'm trying to remember his name. who did a little video series on a back date he did in his in his yard. It was a white car. I can't remember his name, but it was like a short little video series of doing this thing. And I'm thinking, well, I'm about to build this car. Instead of just doing the regular build thread and just update with photos, I'll take some videos because that's something that I would watch.
Yeah, definitely. What year was this? And, by the way,
sorry.
What year was this? When did you get?
2016, I think. End of 2016.
And when did you start the kind of YouTube build process? Same year.
That was it. 2016.
Wow, that's pretty early in YouTube. You know, in terms of
it was
not early as in it's the start of YouTube. But this kind of really big genre of car build, like home car builders or like that had kicked off, but I don't remember it back the 2016 being like as big as anything like as big as it is now, where you can arguably monetize it and survive off the income, and you know, again, if you grow your audience properly.
Yeah, we still I'm still not surviving off the income, that's for sure.
No. Okay.
Even skipping forward and say like even at my you know level now of 120 something thousand subscribers and stuff, it pays for the builds. That's good. But there's no way I'm retiring on it, and it's basically my second full time job. My day job is I'm a firefighter, so that's my day job. But it gives me lots of time off, in between shifts to work on these cars. So I really spend way more time on YouTube that pays almost nothing to compared to my real job.
The thing you're skilled at. I'm wondering if you do. I get the sense that you'd do it anyway, even if YouTube wasn't there. It would be something you'd have had a car project on the go. Maybe not three or four, but you'd have had something on the go, right? Even if it hadn't been something that you'd have.
100%. I would have done it anyway. Whether I ever would have tackled the Alfa Romeo, which we'll get into later, is something different. But going back to Harry, basically, horrible, as it sort of had flaky rust and just like lots of horrible things, but it was a complete car, and that was what I was looking for, because I know that the parts are just so insanely expensive that starting with a shell is almost a negative sum game. You're better off, like in some ways I see like an old 911 shell that people are selling for however much crazy money is actually has negative value, because by the time you put it all together, you may as well have just bought a bomb with everything to start with. I started stripping it apart, took it back to bare metal and found all the rust and stuff. And I just sort of, I'd never sort of repaired rust panels before, but I just sort of gave it a go and just sort of go, okay, well, you know, watch a bunch of YouTube videos and learn how to do stuff, and gradually my skills have improved, and I like learning how to do things, so I wanted to do everything.
And you, by everything, let's just be clear, you mean everything, not everything to the point of not the interior and not the paint and not this and not that. No, you start doing stitchcraft and, you know, like I've binged enough of your stuff now to know that you've done loads of airbrushing stuff in the past. So you had like skills that you could draw on that would allow you some advantage over starting from scratch with that, right?
Absolutely. I left school, joined the army, and then out of the army, I sort of became an airbrush artist. I could draw and sketch. So I used to do sort of murals on cars and mostly cars and Harleys, but a lot of shop, you know, walls and things like that. Yeah. And so I do have a bit of an idea when it comes to painting, but I'm not actually a qualified painter or anything, but I had spent enough time around panel shops to have at least some of an idea there. And so with Harry, once I repaired all the rust and things like that, I built a spray booth in my garage using a $100 gazebo. My hat is off to a lot of you English guys, because the garage space seems to be a real premium over there. Well, compared to here, you know, it's not uncommon. Most people who live in regular Australians live in a house with at least a sort of two-car garage. That's pretty standard. Whereas that seems to be quite opulent in the UK from what I've seen. It's not a common thing at all.
It's not. And the closer to London you get, the more unlikely that is. I mean, I'm in Southampton and I'm lucky that I've got a decent sized garage. It's a width and a half wide, and then I extended it all the way back out, so it's like three cars deep. So again, I'm in the same situation as you. I've got enough space that I could kind of do a decent build. And pretty much do everything in one place, right? I'm not going to try and paint. If I tried to paint, it would look like a kid had done it. So I'm not going to do that. but for the most other things, yeah, I'll give it a crack. So at this point, Harry's kind of, you know, you're progressing through it, and but even that, right? I've noticed you've collected tools along the way. You know, there's all sorts of bits and pieces you've picked up, right? And you don't start out with all of that stuff. You must have gone along and been like, oh god, I really need a whatever it is, and then prioritize buying that thing and then learning how to use it, like a lathe, for example, and that alone, right, is a whole thing to learn. You know, people do that as a job. So
absolutely. I vividly remember, you know, as a kid, I grew up on an 8-acre farm, and you know, my dad had all the tools, and I just always remember being able to go and get whatever tool. And then, as an adult, I joined the army and I moved interstate, and suddenly I didn't have a hammer or a screwdriver. I didn't have anything. So that was such a shell shock to actually go, okay, look, now
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious to buy chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Need to get some tools and gradually, you know, like everything, you sort of, as you need it, you get it and then start learning how to use it. I mean, the lathe you mentioned, that came obviously much, much more recently. And, you know, even when I first started using that, I was a lot worse than I am now. There's still a learning curve, and I'm still far from an expert on the lathe, but I have done some very horrible coarse thread. Like I've made my own threads for oil fitting adapters for the Rockster and things like that. So there's I'm slowly getting my head around it, but it's not pretty, and it's definitely not I'm not getting employed by any machinist anytime soon.
But you know, again, I think this is the beauty of the channel, is that this is the everyman's building channel, right? You can, and it gives you that insight. And I think probably part of the reason, apart from you just being a nice chap anyway, but it makes somebody sit on the, me anyway, right? I sit watching this stuff and I'm like, I could do that. He could do that. I can do that. And I think that is, you probably dumb it down a little bit, but that's pretty inspirational for people. You know, there's loads of stuff out there that just seems so unobtainable, far-fetched, impossible to achieve, that actually watching somebody do it, get stuff right, then criticize their own work and show it on screen. You know, again, I've seen loads of stuff out there where people have produced something and they're not showing you the steps, right? They're not showing you the 50 versions they did off camera. They're showing you the one that looks perfect, that fits like a glove, that never breaks. You're like, that's great, lovely, I'm really enjoying it, but I'm guaranteeing that person has cocked it up, cut their hand, had their wife run them to hospital with their hand up in the air, hoping that their finger's not going to fall off, right? All of that stuff.
Absolutely.
I feel like we get that from you, mate. We get that kind of the whole thing, right? And it's really cool to watch, mate.
A lot of people, I think my channel is very, very nerdy and too in depth for some, which is why like I've never chased the algorithm as they like to say, and you know, gone to buy. Seems to be if you buy a crash Lamborghini and do a bit of a dodgy repair in your garage, then you'll get you know, millions of subscribers,
2 million views, yeah.
Like I've never chased that because I want to build the cars for me. So, I mean, even doing YouTube, you know, inverted commas, YouTube builds is a much better way to go, to sort of do things that look good on camera, but you actually see it in real life and there's just lots of unfinished bits, or it's a bit rough and it looks good from yeah, as I said, looks good on a little screen, but not actually in real life. And
I think that's a key point, right? Is the fact that you own these cars. So you're not doing it. You're not doing it for the views to then flip it and let somebody else have the pain. You know, it's your pain. So like,
exactly.
Ultimately, you want to drive that thing. And if it's unreliable, well, it's unreliable for you. So you've got to go and then fix it. And if it looks scruffy in a place that you did that work, you're going to go and fix it. So.
Exactly. And we talk about Harry, and Harry is looking very worn now. Harry is covered in stone chips and blistered paint where the wheels have gone up inside the wheel arch and touched the paint. And Harry is very, very well used. But I get out and drive the crap out of Harry on dirt roads and everywhere and just use it the way it's supposed to be used. So.
Good for you, man. Good for you. So like, sticking with Harry for a minute, are you planning on doing a post Alfa-Rari? Let's sit down and work out what you need to do with Harry to get him back up to the standard that you kind of want, or are you like, no, this is a used car and this will just live as a used car, and at some point in maybe 10 years when it's falling apart, then I'll do the whole thing again? And what's the plan?
I think more the latter. More I'm going to keep using it. Because to redo it, a lot of the bodywork and stuff that I did, I'd like to do again if I could. But it requires basically stripping the whole car back and starting again. Mechanically, it's really good. Obviously, any who followed me will have seen that I actually one of my viewers reasonably early on, Neil Harvey from Performance Developments he was in Los Angeles. Reached out to me and said, you know, he liked what I was doing, and he wanted to sort of help out with the engine wise, and said, you want to sort of do something a bit different. And I'd never planned on going that crazy. I thought, you know, the best way to go is to see if I can buy a secondhand 3.2 or a 3.6 out of a 964 or 993 or something, and just put that in there and be done. We pulled the engine apart and sent it over to him, and some people had done some really, really horrible things to that
really
engine. Oh, it was one of the most horrible engine inverted commas rebuilds. I mean, I don't know how much of the story is true or not, but the guy I bought the car off of said that they bought the car, it pulled head studs, and so they bought a rebuilt engine off of Gumtree, and you know
when someone buys a rebuilt engine off Gumtree, the rest of the story is going to be bad, right? Straight
yeah.
away.
Yeah. Well, they reckon they drove it 50 meters, it pulled head studs again, and then they just left it for 10 years. Yeah. Whether they bought the engine off Gumtree or whether somebody else, or whether they just did the really dodgy rebuild themselves, but for those who don't really know, the early car, the mid-year cars, the 2.7s have a magnesium case. The later cars had aluminium because it's much much stronger and handles the heat better. But also with the mid-year cars is when they brought in all the emission standards. So they designed them to run really hot to clear emissions better. So they had the 5-blade fan instead of the 11-blade fan and all that sort of stuff in the back. And the issue is that they'd run hot, and the head studs would just pull out of the case because they just got so hot.
Yeah.
So it's a very common thing for all of those early sort of 2.7 mag cases to pull head studs. the sort of the dodgy fix is to do a helicoil, which is you just do a slightly larger hole and you put what looks a bit like a spring into the hole, and that has the extra
that
thread.
That is a horrible fix for something like that.
Yes. Well, the people who, inverted commas, rebuilt Harry's engine obviously sort of drilled out the original pulled head stud holes with a potato and
put some JB Weld in there.
Yeah, well, basically they put the helicoils in, and then when they went to put the thing back together again, realized that all of the head studs were not straight. They're, you know, basically when you put the sort of sit the engine on its side, all the head studs all stick up like a, you know, like a porcupine or something, and theirs were going in all different directions. So when they tried to slide a cylinder and a barrel on, they didn't fit. So they just got a drill out and oblonged the holes through the cylinders and through the heads to get them to fit onto the car.
No way. That's unbelievable.
It was so bad. They absolutely trashed a bunch of cylinders and heads and just by oblonging.
I mean, it's pretty rich write-off, isn't it? You just wouldn't bother with that. Would you? Do they repair them or do they?
Well, that was one of the things that Neil wanted to show is going back to Neil, Neil Performance Developments is ex Brabham Formula One team. So he won two world championships with Brabham, and they're only like two guys building their engines, and he's one of them. He was the head engine builder at Andile. So the Porsche Racing in America. And then TRD, I think, and then he's been out doing his own thing for a long time. So
prolific, a hell of a CV, right?
Yes. Yeah, so he knows air-cooled cars backwards and forwards. While I was building it, he's like, well, let's see if we get these 962 barrels off the shelf here and see if they'll fit. And then they didn't fit, so we didn't use 962 barrels, even though I would have loved that.
cool factor straight away, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, like so, he's got all these sort of cool, you know, bits and pieces that he wanted to show his abilities on this engine. So a lot of people, we actually end up saving my case. So some of the particularly there was one hole that was particularly bad, and he sort of made a custom insert for. So drilled it out and made a custom aluminium insert and then re-drilled everything so it's perfectly square and straight and good, and then put case savers through it. And he's done this a lot because a lot of people, in my case, the engine was toast. It was more just proving that it can be done. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you want a matching numbers engine and you've got a hole in the side of the case or something like that, it's only matching numbers once. So he can actually go through and do these repairs, and so it still holds up and Harry's engine's going gangbusters. So we did all the case savers and stuff, and then we did crazy things like Harry has asymmetrical cams, so they're custom made for Harry. They cost an absolute fortune, they were ridiculous, but every cam you've probably ever seen, the lobes look like an egg. They're even on either side, whereas my cams actually open fast and close slow, so they actually don't have a symmetrical shape. They're asymmetrical cams. Everything is ridiculously custom. And I've got gudgeon pins from McLaren because they're actually lighter and smaller than the 911 ones, and stronger because newer technology and all the rest of it. And I've got custom-made short skirt, smaller rings on the pistons. So the pistons are there's just lots of very, very sort of trick things in the engine. And, and it's just a really, really nice, fun engine.
What's it like to drive? Have you driven anything comparable? Anything else that you've been like, jump out your mate's car into that and you're like, oh no, this is the shit. this is really great.
At least it's really responsive. It's still got it's built to rev to 8, but I've got the red line set at 7.5.
Cool.
because it actually starts tapering off by then anyway. So it's not worth revving it out. So the torque band is quite usable, and it's running individual throttle bodies as well with electronic throttle, which I've made for it, and there's lots of other sort of external things that I've done to it, but on the street, I mean, I've weighed the car with, because I wanted lots of sound deadening and all the rest of it.
Of course.
Three layer, like, went quite into detail on the sound deadening on it to make it a comfortable driving car. I don't want to, the idea of a stripped out race car for the street.
Good in principle, horrendous in actual life, you know, it's just a miserable thing.
Absolutely. It is. Stripped out race cars look really good. You look inside, it's all painted, it's all nice. But
yeah.
But driving it is horrendous. They're horrible. And I didn't want that. I wanted a car that I could actually jump in and do what I do, which is like, you know, I jumped in it and drove to Adelaide for the Adelaide Rally in a day. Mm-hmm. And it was, and because I couldn't go straight through, it was 16 and a half hour drive. In a day straight through, and got 16 out.
16 and a half hours in a day. Wow.
Yes, it was a long.
That's a serious drive, mate.
Normally it's 12 and a half, but roads were closed. There was flooding in the centre of New South Wales, so I sort of had to end up sort of turning around and going back a few times and having to go a different way. And it was over 16 hours to get home during the day. And it does it well. So Harry weighs 1160 kilos, plus or minus 20 kilos, because that's all the weighbridge would do. Not as light as what I would have thought, but that's a real weight with a completely full fuel tank and
wet, you know, so like all fluids and a tank.
All fluids, like I wanted to keep it as scientific as possible. So basically, I weighed myself and some extra ballast so that I was exactly 100 kilos, and then. So I could get it as scientific as I could with the weighbridge I had available. Driving it on the road, like it's quicker than any of the, any of the 3.2s or anything that I've ever driven next to. Mine's a 2.8. It's a bit quicker than my mates, in a straight than a 964 C2. So, so, you know, that's a fully dressed 964 C2. So, it's around that sort of speed. The only dyno figure I have is only 200 horsepower at the wheels, but that was with the old exhaust, but I don't think it makes a lot more than that, to be honest. Mm. That's a real figure. Not trying to exaggerate things for
likes and views
for whatever. I want to try and keep it real. So
yeah, good for you, mate.
Yeah, and look, I love the 911, and now it's got the aircon in it from Classic Retrofit that I just drove to Canberra on the weekend, which is 4 hours. It's only 2.5 hours each way, 2 hours and 50 or something. Yeah, two and a half hours each way. And in the middle of the days, and it was quite hot on the weekend. It was 38, I think. So, okay. It took the sting off. The biggest issue I have with Harry is it has no tint. So I just get blasted through the windows. So I think with some window tint, it'll be better. The aircon definitely does the job. It's not modern car aircon. It's not as good as what you're probably used to in a modern car. But it's a hell of a lot better than having no aircon. I tell you that.
About 38 degrees, no aircon. I was in the Royal Air Force in the UK, and I was in Afghanistan, and we had these horrible. I don't even know what they were. I think they were like Yugo Utes, basically, and they didn't have anything. And it was 48 degrees at one point. And I swear to God, mate, you literally get out of one building and as fast as you can get to the next building, and then you're trapped in this fucking Utes that's got no aircon in that. And so it's just horrendous. So yeah, good on you for trying to get some aircon in there, mate. Yeah, so where were we? So that's Harry pretty much, right? So Harry is working, it's being enjoyed, it's loved. Yes. You've also got the most honking Boxster I have ever seen. It is a pig. Tell the audience, what is the Rockster, mate? What is that thing about?
Well, I bought it and basically showed that it was the ugliest Boxster in Australia.
Definitely, it's got to be. It has to be.
It's like people have sent me photos of other horrible boxes around the world. So like there are a few, but a lot of them seem to be done at least to a better quality. The taste might be horrible, but the quality is, it looks definitely better than the Rockster. So the Rocksters was owned by some young guys in Western Sydney who did some very horrible things to it. It looks like it was actually a really nice spec car. It's black on black, had seat heaters and things like that. The buttons are there, but there's no seat, the seats are gone. It had, when I first got into it, I noticed I could tell it's got Mazda RX-8 seats. And okay. The seat was a little bit wobbly. I don't know why they swapped out the Porsche seats and put the RX-8 seats, because it's not really much of an upgrade.
Reason for that. No, they're not at all.
Well, considering they realized when they put them in there that they don't fit, the bolt holes don't line up. So the driver's seat had one bolt in the front, and I think it had a little tab or something. I think it was a piece of like thin strapping that they had just bolting the diagonally opposite corner. The passenger seat had one bolt only in the seat. It was just sort of flopping around in there because there was couldn't get the other bolt holes to line up. It had this big sort of fiberglass bonnet bulge thing on it. Some people have said it may actually have been a Gembala bonnet bulge for a Cayenne that they've put on it. I've no idea where they got it from, but and it had like these sort of like little sort of red vent slots down the side, it actually had like flashing LEDs inside those holes. I bought it in the sort of 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and as I was driving it home, the sun started going down, and
The mushrooms are wearing off by this point, and you're kind of starting to come back into the, and you realize what you actually bought is, this is horrendous.
I knew it was horrendous from the start. I knew it was ugly. Like, it'd been passed around on a Porsche forum over here, and people were going, look at how ugly this thing is. Nobody's going to buy this thing. And I'm like, I might buy that. So it had super dark tint on all of the windows, so you couldn't see anything out of it,
including the front of the windscreen had a tint, didn't it?
It also had front windscreen tint, which was horrible. And then they tinted the headlights as well, and they changed to put some stupid HID things or something in there that didn't work. So like they turned on, but they were like a park light. They were there was no light coming out of it. So I'm trying to drive home on the freeway in the dark. With, you know, there's no street lights, and
candles,
there's just
basically.
I couldn't even, well, looking through a tinted windscreen, I couldn't see that there was absolutely no glow on the road at all. I had to get my wife, who like thankfully she drove me there, to drive in front so I could just follow, because I could see nothing. That was some of the least horrible things they did to the car. And to make matters worse, the interior was also full of glowing LEDs, so like it was bright red inside, and I couldn't see anything through the
mural or something as well. There was some sort of like I don't know, like a mascot or something that was floating around. I can't, what was that about?
Yes, they found American Eagle stickers. They must have had a sticker pack.
That's it. Yeah.
That had sort of the big eagle, but they had like three stickers, so they had to use all three stickers.
Of course,
there's like
three
different
three
sizes of the eagle. So they've got one eagle on the bonnet with a slightly smaller one just up above it.
Yeah, you've got an eagle with a little mate eagle. Of course, you have.
Yeah, and then the third one was on the. There's like a little sort of perspex thing between the headrest of the car when you got the. And they had the third eagle on there. They. they decided to add aero to the car, which is one of the most amusing parts of the car.
I mean, you've got to add aero to a Boxster, right? They're crying out for the extra aero.
You do. So they bolted a cheap wing on the back that didn't have any structure. It just flopped backwards and forwards. So sort of active DRS, as I called it. But most amusingly is they built a diffuser under the back with door stops. So they actually bought rubber door stops.
I remember seeing this though. Yeah.
Yes, they bought rubber door stops. You know, and if you actually look closely, it actually had door stop raised on them. That actually says door stop on them, and they wood screwed them to the car, but then painted, resprayed the car over the top of those door stops.
Yeah, of course.
So they were painted on.
Yeah, apparently. Had
stick on side pipes, like the, you know, all the cheapest, nastiest, horrible things you can get for cars from whatever cheap, nasty stores you get. And they'd stuck side pipes on it, like fake plastic side pipes, and
not connected to anything, just glued onto the side.
No, just stuck onto the skirts. Yeah. They're just so many horrible things. But the most criminal thing that they did, the most horrible thing they did to the car was they looked at the big holes in the front bumper and go, that's a perfect place to mold in some driving lights. So they completely molded in and completely blocked the radiators with these driving lights. There was no airflow at all could get to the radiator.
Did you manage to get home on that then? If you were driving at home, did it not overheat?
I did, and the temperature gauge went up a bit, but didn't go crazy. But
testament to Porsche's engineering for keeping.
Well, I think it must have been doing. It's done enough to it over time that. I took it on one track day, and the engine threw a rod through the side of the block and didn't like it. It obviously had too much. I'd already removed those driving lights.
Whatever you want to call them. Incredible. Yeah.
Yes. But so there were so many horrible, hideous things, and that's barely touching the surface of it. Yeah. Yes. But
the sad thing is a 986, even an early 2.5, is a lovely car. You don't need to do anything to those cars. They're lovely. They're a really great car. They're quite cheap relatively compared to what else you can buy. Why the hell would you start adding side pipes glued to a side skirt? I mean, I just don't understand the mentality, but it makes for good viewing.
The thing
anyway.
Is like you guys seem to have the cheapest Porsches on the planet in the UK.
Oh yeah, no, we are blessed for that, definitely.
But by a long way, because after talking to Ajmal previously, yes, and I know he had a Boxster. I think he sold for
$3,500.
I think he sold it for £2,000 or something like that. Like it was a horrible, mouldy Boxster, but it was a running.
It's a running Boxster
car. Yeah, like here, the cheapest they ever got would have been about $10,000. So for a running Boxster, so what's that, £6,000? The cheapest
ever. And like, even 911, like a 996, right, every now and again, loads of tips, right, you'll find loads of tips out there for, £10,000 in the UK still. You can still see them, which I'm pretty sure that boggles everybody else's mind. I don't know how hard it is to do a tip to manual conversion, but it can't be that difficult.
There's work in it, but like to give you a tip, the cheapest 911 you get here would be a tip cab 996. Here that's a $50,000 car at least, so £30,000 for a tip cab. A manual coupe is 60,000.
Wow, that's so much money, isn't it?
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. And that's a cheap. That's the low end of the scale.
That's something scruffy that's not been looked after. It's not really been serviced as a specialist or anything. It's just been.
Up there, but we have luxury car tax here that you pay on if you import anything or even new cars. That's 33%. So. I always knew watching Top Gear growing up, if they mention a car's price, particularly exotic car prices in pounds, we'd have to times it by three to get what that car would cost in Australia in dollars, even crazy. Though it should only be times it by 1.5 to get the real conversion. So we're literally double the cost of cars here.
And then you've got to get an engineer's inspection, rego, and everything else done when you get, which is not easy either, right? If you bring a car into Australia.
There's lots of restrictions. You can't bring in anything that's under 25 years old. So you can't sort of cheat and go, oh, I'll just buy a 991 from the UK and bring it over because it's, you know, so much cheaper than it is here. Mm-hmm. You can't do that unless you've owned it for more than 12 months and you're mm-hmm. moving here. Yeah. So if you were going to move here, you could bring a car you own, one car you can bring. That's it.
Wow,
so,
right, okay.
That's the only way, and yeah, there's no easy way around it. We've got lots of, you know, strict rules. On
I never really understand those rules. It seems like I don't know how. I just don't know what the government's trying to achieve by it. Especially like if you I don't know if you watch Mighty Car Mods, but those guys bring tons of stuff over in like suitcases back or half cuts to get their cars built, because to get stuff over from Japan is so difficult. Otherwise, you've just got to improvise, right, and find ways around that stuff. Otherwise, you're just never going to get anything done. I just don't understand what the reason is. But
basically, it was to protect the Australian car industry. But the thing is the Australian car industry died completely about 5 years ago, I think. So there's Holden doesn't exist anymore. It's now gone. Yeah. And Ford, the Falcons that were being built here, that they died a year or so before that. So that's what it was for. And I mean, that's why Mighty Car Mods sort of bring in half cuts, because you can bring in half a car as long as it's cut in half. Mm. So you can bring in both halves, but it can't be like unless it's older, like some of the older Japanese cars. So we got, like you guys did, all the GDRs and the Silvias and all that sort of stuff. And that was really good because, you know, Japan's close as well, so that makes it sort of easier. But the rules are sort of hanging around, and it's no real point to it, because basically luxury car taxes on any car that's over about $60,000 Australian, which is not. Yeah, there's not much under that anymore. Like it's quite a But I don't buy new cars, so it doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, exactly. And then getting back to we're off topic massively now. Getting back to the Rockster then. So where is it now? The engine was blown. You had it up on the ramp a number of times to do bits and pieces here and there after dipping out AlfaRari. So what's the current status of that car then?
Well, the plan always was that I'd heard years before that the gearbox in a Boxster, the standard gearbox is an Audi front wheel drive gearbox in the back of a Boxster. So the Audi engines bolt up to it. So I've got an Audi 4.2 liter V8 out of a 2003 Audi A6 that I've now got in the Boxster, and it starts and runs and overheats. So that's where I am. Right. I still haven't sorted the overheating issue. I think I'm on top of it, but that's, you know, that car is to be a track car, and I've got all these bits to go into it, like including some nice race seats that are sitting right next to me here. But I've got to get it running properly first, and I'm almost there, but it keeps beating me up, so I keep putting it in the back burner because it's annoying.
And you get sidetracked by what I think, and when I asked you to come onto the engineering, timing wise, I really wanted it to be after you dropped the engine in, and mate, congratulations, that was what, you know, I'm waiting for that day where it goes massively. I mean, it's been picked up anyway. I'm sure you've seen viewer increases off the back of this, but wait until that car's finished, mate, and it goes viral, and then you just get completely swamped, because it is again, I'm wittering because I think it's such a phenomenal thing, and I'm not going to do it justice. So you tell the audience, mate, what are you building?
Well, I got a an Audi, sorry, with Audi. I got a 1973 Alfa Romeo 2000 GTV that I was looking for something to engine wise to put into it, and after spending a hideous amount on a 911 engine, I found how cheap relatively Ferrari engines were, and I actually bought a Ferrari 360 engine, which has cost me a fraction of what the 911 engine cost me, let me tell you.
Bonkers, isn't it?
It is insane. I barely spent, I think if I was going to do up the original Alfa Romeo engine from the car, I think I would be pretty close to what it cost me to buy the Ferrari engine anyway. Like, like on the scheme of things, okay, it's not a cheap engine, but it kind of is, because the thing is that they're really reliable. Mm. And like the wrecker I went to had four just Ferrari 360 engines, like the one I have on the shelf, mm-hmm. that have been sitting there covered in dust, because nobody in those cars, well, Ferrari owners often don't drive their cars, or don't want to put any miles on them, and they're a reliable engine. So with no miles on them, they're reliable. They're not going anywhere, so they don't need to sell them. So it was quite an affordable engine, really, on the scheme of things, and it was a real challenge to see if I could actually get my head around how it actually works and put it into the car and get it. Get it in a state that hopefully it will run.
The thing that struck me with that is that before committing to doing it, did you sit down and go, right, this is how much engine space I've got to work with, and this is the size of a V8 Ferrari. Doesn't look on the surface they're a match made in heaven. Did you do much in the way of like measuring up, or was it like, it'll be fine, I can do this?
I did some rough measurements, and sort of the rough measurements I got was like, yes, it can fit. But again, that was measuring an engine that didn't have headers on it. It didn't have, you know, it was a
all
raw
block. The ancillaries,
block.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And it still took so much to get it to work. One of the biggest hurdles to overcome is that the Ferrari engine is a factory dry sump engine.
Mm.
So instead of having, you know, the regular sump at the bottom of the bottom of the engine, it has a separate tank. But on the Ferrari, that actually mounts on top of the gearbox, on top of the transaxle.
And
the oil return from that dry sump goes through a gallery in the gearbox, separate from the gearbox oil, and through the bell housing back into the engine.
Wow.
So it joins in. So when you unbolt the engine, you've got like the regular, you know, clutch and flywheel, and then off to one side, there's a big hole where the oil goes back into the engine.
Bloody hell.
I had to actually make, one of my viewers helped design the adapter plate.
Yeah.
My adapter plate to fit the new gearbox is 50 mil thick. So it's a nice big thick adapter plate. The oil has to come into the side of the adapter plate and turn 90 degrees and go back into the engine. And then I had to build my own dry sump tank. And because everything is so tight, I couldn't run a dry sump tank in the back of the car, because there's just nowhere to fit the oil lines through, unless they went down, been the lower, underneath the car, lower than anything else. Mm. There's nowhere to go. So I've actually built it inside behind the wheel arch between the inner chassis frame and the outer skin behind the wheel, in that little cavity is where I've built this custom dry sump tank. And a dry sump tank is not just a bucket. It's like it's got diffusers and stuff to get rid of the oil foaming, and there's so many things like that I had to overcome on this car to get it to work, and add electric windows and power steering and,
And again, same bad thing, right? To try and make it a drivable car. This isn't a concept or something that is just going to be static, that you can walk past and go, oh, look, it's a nice Ferrari engine that doesn't move in a car that doesn't move. This is, again, going to be a car that you are intending on driving, albeit now it's got PPF on it and things like that to try and stop it from getting hammered by stone chips. But you're intending on driving this thing, right? That's the thing.
Absolutely. I intend on using it a lot, and it will get covered in stone chips and used. And it looks, it's really looking really nice, and I built it to be a nice car that look okay in, you know, if I do take it to a to Cars and Coffee or, you know, car show or something. But it's not going to win any awards at a car show because you know, there are still little things that bug me. There's little imperfections in the paint. There might be a spot here and there, even though I've gone over it so many times. And it's a real
build.
And yeah, I got the gearbox into it yesterday, so that was a lot of wrestling around because again, there's no room. I had to build a obviously the gearbox I'm using is from a Subaru BRZ.
Okay,
which should be up to the task. A lot of people are worried that it's not strong enough, but the Ferrari engines are very
low torque.
It's a revy
right?
engine.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Medium to low torque, high revs. It's not designed to just put.
It's a low torque, high revving engine. It revs to 8,700 RPM. So it's quite a revy V8. And the Subaru BRZ turbos that have similar sort of power output, start to break the gearbox at about the similar power output as the Ferrari engine.
Okay.
But turbo cars, you know, make a lot more torque much lower. Like when the boost kicks in, it really shock loads the gearbox a lot. Whereas you really have to rev the car to get the power out of the Ferrari engine. So we'll see. But there are gear sets you can get, and I couldn't fit anything bigger because there's just no room,
no space. Have you figured what's the expected top speed then with the gear set that's in at the moment? Is it what
the gearing? It's geared so they can do just over 300, but like there's no way I'm going anywhere near that.
Can you imagine? Hanging over to your life.
Yes, the theoretical by gearing top speed, by gearing and revs, is 305 or 310 or something. Like, I'm not going to see how not close I get to that. I'm not interested. Okay. It's not for me. But I did obviously factor in the gearing when I looked at that. And I've got the diff away. That's one of the few things I couldn't find enough information on to do myself. I really don't like it, but I've just sort of dropped it into a guy to it's got a factory sort of basic LSD in it that I'm getting tightened up. I do understand the principles of building a diff with getting the correct lash and the wear patterns of the teeth and stuff like that, but the issue is A, not having all the tooling and all of the parts. It's just it didn't make sense. But most things I like to try. So I'm sitting here next to a whole bunch of leather that's today my I'm actually sort of halfway through this week's video. So I put the gearbox in yesterday, which was a lot of a headache. Now I want to actually start fitting the seats and start building the center console and things
so
like
exciting.
That. So
This bit for me is, I mean, I'm itching for you to chuck it on some wheels, even if it's just like, I just want to see it on the ground with the wheels on it. I don't care if it's, do you know, I like that because that gives you like here we go, right? It's not close. I know it's not close, but it's tantalizing, right? It's that little like, here you go, have a look at this.
Absolutely. And like, I've got some sort of, it's not on the ground because, I've just taken the diff away, but more, I've got some suspension stuff. I'm working with a company in the background that I've still got to get finished. So there's that coming, and there's still so much to do. As I said, I've got to sew the entire interior and finish the wiring. Obviously I rewired the entire car, had no wiring. So I made a whole new body wiring loom and then rewired the Ferrari engine because the standard Ferrari engine, it's old sort of 90s technology where they had, ran like 2 4 cylinders, or it ran two separate ECUs, and it was all completely sort of separate. So I've got a much more much better link ECU that I'm running to get that, and I've still got to convert the gauges over because the gauges on the Alpha were cable driven, and so I'm going to gut them, and I've got other gauges I've got to put in there that I want to still keep mechanical gauges. I don't want screens.
I figured you would. I knew this is coming. You don't like anything that isn't, I guess, faithful to its origins. Is that fair to say?
With respect
to it, at least, even if it's not like a leap into the modern age from an old car.
Yeah, look, people give me heaps because like I've been on my rants about the modern sort of HID type headlights that people seem to like ruining old cars with these days that I really hate. But then people argue that I've put a relatively modern Ferrari engine in it, so I've ruined it anyway. I'm a bit of a hypocrite in that way. But there's things that I like, and I think Singer gets away with it, but then everybody else started copying and following, and it just doesn't look nice. I agree.
There's a fine line between jumping on a bandwagon and actually following your own kind of direction. And I think Singer are just one of those very fortunate people. Gunther works probably a little bit as well. You know, there's companies out there that are kind of doing their own thing and they're tending to kind of get it right most of the time. The DLS is an incredible car. And I think when you see that in the flesh, it all comes, the cohesiveness of the design is so well thought out. Someone's agonized over every tiny decision. The likelihood of somebody having the skill and the design knowledge to be able to package something up without that amount of thought and get it right is, unless you've got that design team doing it, you're really probably not going to get it anything like Singer. So it's chasing just, wrong.
Just most people just adding those headlights to a car, like, but I mean, Gunther Works, I really like what they've done. Their stuff looks really good, but that they have heavily modified the car, in so many ways that it's cohesive and it works. And the DLS is absolutely next level. I'm actually quite shocked that Singer have limited the number and that's it of they're going to do the DLS, because that just seems to be absolutely.
I don't know. Not yet. It is, but then I was thinking about this, and I'm a big Swiss watch fan as well, and Rolex are the same. If you limit what your production is, you'll limit the ability for people to get a hold of this stuff. Your brand value goes up massively. So it might be that. And Singer have worked with Tut Hill, and they've done some of the off-road studies stuff with them. I think Singer are. I think they're trying to turn effectively what was a rebodied, reimagined 911 into something completely different. I almost see them as a whole new brand of their own now, right? I've not spoken to them, not officially anyway. That's where I can imagine their strategy is to take what was a company that was rebuilding 911s into no, we're a whole new thing. The shape's the same, but everything else is not.
The quality of their work and stuff is absolutely amazing. I question at the moment, because I believe that they've finished doing the classic order. You can no longer order a classic Singer. You can only order the turbo, and the turbo doesn't really do it for me, unfortunately.
Have you seen it in person?
I haven't seen it in person. I've seen the photo, and it looks amazing. Like what they've done is still stunning, and the quality, but it just not. It doesn't pull at my heartstrings the classic, and definitely not the DLS. I think is just, as I said, just next level, just unbelievable, we'll see what else they have coming out in the future, because I'm sure they've got plenty of other stuff in the wings.
They're 10-20 year plan, mate. Then they know exactly what they're doing, those guys.
Yeah,
it's like a well-oiled machine.
I think Singer must be the first people ever to backdate a 964 to look like a G-body, that's for sure. No one else has done that.
No.
But the cars I've seen a couple of Singers in the flesh, and they're just, the attention to detail is so far next level. Everyone says that this is the Singer of this company or that company, and the ones I've seen have never up to the same standard.
I'm not going to name the company, but I did go to Goodwood Festival of Speed last year, and everybody was talking about a particular brand. They'd done one car. I'm not even going to give the model away because it immediately identifies the company. And I was able to go and have a walk around that car, and I saw stick-on carbon fiber on the plastic. And I was like, at that point, no. I stopped looking at the rest of the car. I was like, if you've done that, it's unforgivable to show a car at Goodwood of all places and you've got stick-on wrap-on carbon fiber on your car. That's
no,
thing. It's not a thing. And it's a shame because I think the concept looked great, but the finish, and I think, again, like you said, that's what Singer get right, is the fact that everything is important. That's their kind of slogan, and you can tell by looking at the car. Even their mule, right? I had a look at their mule, and their mule was like next level. Ugly, bitzer, but everything individually was, you could tell that it was an iteration of an iteration of an iteration. It wasn't like the one and done. It was like, this is the 50th version of this gear knob that we're trying out.
Yeah. You know? And that's where they really shine. And yes, like any stick on carbon fiber should be burned in hell. Like it's horrible.
I don't care if it's 8D. I don't care if it's made by 3M. I don't care who it's made by.
No.
Burn the lot of it. Get a massive big bonfire and burn the lot.
Even the GR Yaris. Like I've got a bunch of mates who've got the GR Yaris.
And the roof.
It's got a real carbon fiber roof. That they didn't like the forged carbon fiber, so they put the stick on bloody carbon on the. It looks horrible.
It's just hideous. And I'd love to know what the cost of them doing that. Right, that would have cost them money. Every car they produce cost them an extra, like, I don't know, $100 to put that stupid wrap on the roof. And the forged carbon looks fine anyway. I don't know why they just leave it.
It does.
Like that.
It really does look fine. Like the ones I've seen where people have pulled it off and polished up the roof, it looks great. But they're just like, oh, no, it's too messy. Nobody will understand it. And they just let it. I'm just like, no.
Whatever.
No stick on carbon. Just paint it white then. Or paint it the same color as the car.
Anything. Because we're running out of time. So let's just wrap up on what's next for you then, mate. So you're working on the interior work now on the Alfa RE. That's going to keep you occupied for a while, right? That's a big job.
Very slow and tedious. I actually have my next project sitting out in the wings.
Have
but,
you? Can you divulge what it is, or is it
going to
keep
you? I'm not going to publicly divulge that yet, but I can say that it is a big change from what I've done before. But again, I'm not chasing the algorithm or views. I'm doing something that. Something for me that it works for me. So that's what it is, and it'll still be built to the same sort of standards that I'm trying to get to, which is hoping to get towards those Singer level of quality that I'll just never reach, but continually aiming for. So that's sort of where I'm at.
Cool, man. I'm super grateful for taking the time out to do this. I've really enjoyed it, mate. I've loved getting your insight into everything you've done and sort of the history. Weirdly, normally I start all of these things. I've got so Thursday. I'm at. I don't know if you know any of these UK brands, Auto Farm. They're a big company in the UK. They do lots and lots of renovation work. They've been around for a long time. And they're right next door to Box and Gas, Frank Cassidy, if you know Box and Gas.
Yep.
And I'm at Box and Gas, and my Cayman's being featured in their Niners series on Thursday. And also I'm at Auto Farm shooting another engineering episode with Auto Farm. And all of these, I always start them with finding out the backstory about from someone's childhood to how they got into where they are now. And with you and me, you're the only person that I've skipped all. I've gone straight to the meat. So anyway, I don't know what happened, but
yes, it's a bit of a rambling episode, I think, for you. We've gone all over the place, but
all the best ones.
Yeah,
they're the best ones.
It was nice to have a chat, and I have to get back over to the UK at some stage and have a look. Maybe
do
next
mate.
Year.
Yeah. When was the last time you came over?
Must have been. Three or four years ago, at least, maybe longer. Like, Mrs. Jeff speaks fluent French, so we've been to France multiple times. Like, she lived there, and we're trying to get over Europe. Trouble is coming from here to Europe. There is so much to see. There are so many countries and so much stuff all in one spot, but it's so far away that trying to concentrate it all together is really difficult. So,
Well, if you go over to the UK, give us a shout, and we'll get like a group of us that you've connected with, and go and do something. Go and find some way of connecting us all together.
That sounds very good. I'll look forward to it. No
good
problem.
Stuff, mate. Thanks again for your time, and we'll catch up another time.
All right. See you, mate.
Take care, bud. Thanks, man.
Well, I hope you really enjoyed that episode. I really did. It's been a little while since I watched that back, and it was really fun to watch. So, I'll be back next week. If you want to listen to any previous episodes, you can do that on any podcast streaming service. At Reengineering UK on Instagram, and I post daily for that, and TikTok, Facebook. Basically, if you search for Reengineering, not Reengineering, you'll find me. I hope you've had a lovely week. I hope you enjoyed the content, and I will see you again very soon. Thanks very much for watching. Goodbye. Shortly, like I said, if you want to be on Your Porsche Stories, slide in the DMs or at in.